Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
If you want more than headlines this Bears season, listen to the Take the North podcast. I'm Mark Rohde, joined by Dan Wiederer. We bring you honest, unfiltered Bears talk three times a week, and we're not afraid to be critical when it's deserved or certainly give credit when it is earned. With insider access and perspective that brings you inside the Bears locker room, Take the North is your home for Bears conversation that keeps it real. Listen to and follow Take the North wherever you get your pods.
The score! Somebody help Layla, please.
I can't.
Are we supposed to say big money right now?
No, I can't stop laughing. This hour is brought
coffee
to
cake?
You by Jewel Osco.
I mean, Chris Tannehill made 1,000 wings for us, and she couldn't give him a bite of her coffee cake, and she whips out the coffee cake again.
It smells really good. I can smell it from here.
Layla.
I made a coffee cake. I got the ingredients at Jewel Osco. This hour is brought to you by this.
Jewel's.
It's time for 5 on. Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris with Mark Rohde bring you 5 topics on their minds today on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I got 5 on. Number 1.
Run the Jewels.
You go first, by the way.
I'll go first.
You go first.
They're
Let Layla.
So mad at me because I didn't know Tanny was making wings. I just brought the breakfast I made.
The reaction you had to yesterday when I said that, you've got your mouth full, you just stopped. You stopped eating. Tanny turns around like, what the hell?
We're on the clock. Let's go.
It's time for 5 on it with Giggles, Harris, and Grody. Question
Giggles.
Number
I'll
one.
Go second, by the way.
Yeah. How many wins will it take to win the NFC North?
This is a great question. Yeah. Who submitted this question? Oh, wait, it was me.
You're coming up with all the good stuff today.
You should submit it to people like Chris Kindlemark.
Yeah, you know this is why you're our glue guy, man.
This is why I can't deal with y'all, because y'all be saying crazy stuff. Listen. To win the NFC North, which currently the Bears are tied for the division lead. With
yeah!
6 wins. They do lose the tiebreaker because they got blown out the frame by the
Shut
Detroit
up
Lions
about that part.
Back
just,
in week 2.
Just, hey, who's got the same numbers at the top of the column?
It's going to take 11 wins to win the NFC North. That's the answer. And 11 is probably not going to be a one-team thing. There probably will be 2 teams that have 11 wins. So then it's going to come down to tiebreakers. That's why if the Bears want to win this division, they must win on Sunday and get their first NFC North win of the season. Because right now, they are 0-2. Everybody else in the division has a win in the division. And the Minnesota Vikings, by the way, have a division best 2-0 record in the division despite being 4-5. But 11 wins is what it's going to take to win the division.
12 wins.
12.
No,
12?
She goes up one.
A dozen.
Wow.
Think about what it took last year. Last year took 15. That's a pretty big difference. I'm not asking for 15 here.
I do want to explain something based on your answer, because you know I did the math on this. That means the Lions or the Bears would have to win 6 of their last 8 games, or the Green Bay Packers would have to win 7 of their last 8 games to get to 12. I don't think anybody's doing that.
I don't know that. Yeah, it may not be the minimum number. It's the outright number. You're doing the minimum number. I'm saying outright, I'm going to give them 12.
No, I don't think anybody's getting to 12.
The division winner. I'm not saying that that's...
No, I'm saying I don't think anyone in the NFC North...
I don't think it's
the
Packers.
Yeah.
They lost last night.
Go Pack, go.
They can't score.
They would have to win 7 of their last 8 games.
The Bears can't score. Look at the Packers' last 2 games.
Yeah, the Pack is 5-3. Detroit and the Bears are 6-3, and there's Minnesota 4-5.
Don't forget the one.
Yeah.
On the
oh, and one. You're right. They did have a tie. Will Minnesota be 4-6 by the end of Sunday? We'll discuss that as the week goes on. I have the Bears. I'm going to hold it up here right now. Here it comes. I'm going to turn it around. Oh, I got 11. It will take 11 wins in this division for a team to clinch it. I don't know who it's going to be. Like I said yesterday, I do think that the Bears for the first time have opened my eyes for that possibility. But I do think it's going to take 11 wins to win the NFC North.
Yeah, I just can't see anyone getting to 12 because, again, the Lions or the Bears would have to win 6 of their last 8, or the Packers would have to win 7 of their last 8.
Well, and then the other part of it is, too, for me, what I'm factoring in, and Layla, you made a great point, like 15 wins, won it last year. The even though the division is really good, not, Green Bay is not as good. I don't know what Green Bay is. We'll discuss that later.
I don't think they do either,
right. Yeah. Minnesota might suck. Detroit, while probably the best team in the division still and probably will win the division, not as good as they were last year. That's why I put the number at 11.
Number 2. Who is the most underrated player on the Bears roster?
Is it Darnell Wright, even though he's gotten a lot of love? I think it's still Darnell Wright. The man plays chess. He does cartwheels. He is playing with what looks like a very bad elbow. I'm pretty sure it's like that brace you were wearing, Ray, a couple years ago, where every time you moved, we thought it went like...
Robot arm.
The man is doing things. He's also playing well at right tackle. And I don't know what that video game move was on Brian Burns, but...
It was lovely. That's
what
it was.
It was the touch of death. I don't know what the heck happened there. It's like The Simpsons, you know, the little touch of death. And then, you know, Marge is like, Bart, stop giving your sister the touch of death. So for me, even though he doesn't have a horn, he's still a unicorn to me, Darnell Wright.
What do you think, Mark?
Poor guy was born without a horn.
Who's your underrated guy?
I really feel... bad for him. wow.
I don't have a horn.
There's a lot of options, right?
Yeah, there are. Because, like, so many of these guys, like who do I have on my brain? I have Luther Burden on my mind, but he's done a lot with the opportunities that he's had so far this year. Most underrated Chicago. Because I feel like so many are properly
rated.
They're rated
this year. Yeah, they're just properly.
Hear me out.
Rated.
Nashawn Wright.
They're not overwhelming.
I looked.
They're not
I thought about. I'm struggling. I'm obviously struggling here. I thought about Nashawn Wright.
Start naming Bears.
I thought about him. I thought about Nashawn Wright, but he's.
You can continue to think about it. I got one for you. I think the most underrated player on the Chicago Bears.
Yeah.
Is Kevin Byard.
I thought about him too.
We don't talk about him. We know he does stuff. Look at how many interceptions he already has this season. But we really don't talk about him. And I think it's a good thing that if you're on this defense and you don't get talked about, that means you're not part of the problem. And the defense has been problematic.
Okay. All right. In that vein, I'm going to go with Noah Sewell because he just sort of stepped in. And he's been imperfect for sure. But he has stepped in this year and been impressive. And I think that the coaching staff at the beginning of this year identified him as, we can do more with this player, and I think he's maybe a little bit underappreciated.
On Twitter, Black Ned Flanders says Andrew Billings. Good call.
Big Bill?
Yeah. I like Big Bill.
We noticed when he wasn't there, when he was injured, that's for sure.
Number 3. Shout out to Black Ned Flanders.
Hell yeah,
thanks
Black
for listening.
Ned Flanders is awesome.
This is 5 on It with Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, and Mark Grody right here on 670 The Score. Here's question number 3. After losing to the Bears, the Giants fired head coach Brian Daboll. Who do you think will be the next coach fired in the NFL?
did the better question is, did the Dolphins win save Mike McDaniel's job this year?
Because definitely save it for a week.
That's where I'm at with this is that I feel like it's it just feels like after they got rid of their GM who had been in the organization for many years, that perhaps the axe would fall next for Mike McDaniel. You'd think that when the GM gets let go like that, the person who's also in a leadership role who spent less time, you know, at the helm of that leadership role would also be next. But when you beat the Bills 30-13, I'm sure that buys you a lot of goodwill. So the question just becomes how much. So that's really where I sit with the who's next. Because prior to that win, I would have said Mike McDaniel outright. So I'm still probably going in that direction. But I just don't know when.
I think it's interesting that McDaniel comes to your name. Excuse me, comes to your mind before several other guys.
Okay.
And when I say several other guys, I'm talking about guys like Jonathan Gannon in Arizona.
Just looking up him.
That thing has fallen apart.
Well, it's not even that. Let's be very clear. it's less about it, quote unquote, falling apart for him, and more about he's stuck in that division with those other teams. So there's no real path to coming back. Let's say they play better the rest of the season, the back half of the season. That's not going to necessarily equate to wins and losses. Or excuse me, it'll equate to losses.
But they lost to the Titans.
They did. Yeah. And wait. It's not that they lost to the Titans. It's how they lost to the Titans.
Fair.
And so I think Jonathan Gannon is the easy answer, my runner-up for that. Or did you go yet, Grody?
No, but okay, I was. But Jonathan Gannon is on my list, but carry on.
No, then I'll just leave it there. And if you don't say this guy, then I'll come back to this guy.
Okay, well, I'm actually, I'm surprised Mike McDaniel still has a job, honestly. I thought that he was going too. So
it
unraveling. It really did, and it felt like even before the season started. Hell, it unraveled against the Bears when they were having the dual practice and all his players were crying about how physical the Bears were being. That was the point at which I
was really about Dolphins.
What was that really about? That was the point at which I started to look at that organization cross-eyed, and specifically the head coach, and that's where that stuff comes is from the top. All right, and then man, honorable mention too, and I know they've won two in a row, but Aaron Glenn, could he be a one and done-er?
First year?
I mean,
because
it happens.
Because the Jets are so dysfunctional, it has to be part of the discussion.
It has to be part
of
the discussion.
And it's not necessarily Aaron Glenn. It's Jets. Jets coach.
Which is also why you might leave him in.
Insert name.
Because you're not going to, it's nobody else is going to do better. That might actually work in his favor, because what are we doing? Does it really matter who our coach is? But, up until recently, he was on a bad path.
I think Layla's point is true, though, because of how dysfunctional they are. You can't rule out that they would just fire him after one season.
Woody everybody. Johnson? You have no idea what that guy's doing.
Of course. And the other...
Meatloaf!
He made our guy cry, Justin Fields.
The other guy I'm just going to mention here and just let it soak in. Zach Taylor? Are we guaranteed?
Oh, yeah.
What has he done to deserve another year?
Joe Burrow's coming back. Andy says he's big into crystals, so I think that that might work in his favor.
One-time coaching star. It's amazing how Brian Daboll looked like a coaching star. Obviously was before with the Buffalo Bills and with as well doing good things in his first year, but then, of course, he's gone.
Somebody smart's going to pick up old Brian Daboll, and I think he'll be fine.
As a coordinator, you think?
Coordinator.
Perhaps. You don't think he gets another bite at the apple?
Not immediately.
I guess it depends on who's let go, right?
Yeah, probably down the road.
Lions need a coordinator.
Number four.
Hey, Dan Campbell's calling plays.
Got to coordinate.
He's doing a great job.
Go for it on fourth down every time.
Question number four. Did Cade Horton get robbed?
Didn't we know? Didn't we suspect? Didn't I suspect out loud that a young catcher, even though he was on a poor team based on record, would probably get the nod, because young hitting catcher is indeed a unicorn without a horn? Or is the horn the bat in this scenario?
It's a good question. But
I have a horn.
Yeah, God, it hurts me every time. I really want to help those that were born without horns.
You're so sad that you didn't hear him say it.
I am. That's more of the thing. But maybe it was best left at that. I only could have made it worse.
Was it more surprising, though, the way that Cade Horton finished second? That was part of it for me. But I don't know. Braves young hitting catcher, and I think the world just freaks out, and they're like, we must give you Rookie of the Year.
Is it the fact that he lost, or, as you mentioned, only getting 9 of the 30 first place votes?
Mm, good distinction.
And he got the rest of them. 21 of them went to Drake Baldwin. I get it. It's catcher. He played longer. He played 124 games, so he played basically three-fourths of the season.
Cal Raleigh effect, too, in a way. It was his year. Kind of keeps you in that mindset of success for that position.
His OPS plus was 126. His slash line, 274, 341, 469. He hit 19 bombs.
There it is.
And he only struck out 68 times. So I get it. I think him being on a losing team, I thought, was going to count for more of the vote than it did.
Typically it has. MVP is obviously the biggest example of that, but yes.
And then Cade Horton, to have a 1.08 whip, to have a 144 ERA plus, for Cade Horton not to get it just tells you that he probably needed to be up longer.
Yep.
And that was the difference maker. This is about service time more than anything else.
That's it. I mean, I did when we did the segment earlier, I did predict that Drake Baldwin would win it in part because of Cade Horton just kind of coming out of nowhere, and he was furiously good while he was here, but just not enough. The catcher factor for Baldwin is big. And shout out to Caleb Durbin, too. I know that we shouldn't shout out Milwaukee players, but he is a Lake Forest guy, so he was the third finalist of the Milwaukee Brewers.
Yeah, he gets credit, and unfortunately during the playoffs, too.
Yeah, he was good, and, you know, like I said, four Bears.
Number five.
This is 5 on It on 670 The Score with Raheemy, Harris, and Grody. Here's our final question,
which is inspired
by the CHSN broadcast duo of Wayne Randazzo and Stacey King. Comedian and actor Craig Robinson, star of the movie Hot Tub Time Machine, was in attendance for last night's Bulls-Spurs game. If you could hop in the Hot Tub Time Machine, what year would you choose and why?
I would choose December 2019, and I would warn every person I could, and I'd probably look crazy about what the pandemic was going to end up doing. That's it. That's all I got. I'm sorry I wouldn't go farther back in time. I don't know.
Would they listen?
No. Because I was reading about it even then, and people were like, you really think this is going to get big? And I was like, I don't know, man. These articles coming out of China seem pretty severe. And, you know, Adam Silver had that press conference, and we're all packed in like sardines listening to him talk about it. And, man, that was All-Star Weekend, which was here in town. So, yeah, if I had to go back, that would be the one. I'd be like, listen, buy a lot of toilet paper. Like, here's what's going to happen. How are you going to prepare? And, yeah, I'm sure I would look crazy. I feel it.
I would go back to 1979. I want to meet my parents as new parents.
Back to the Future here.
You know, because I've already been born. I'm not jeopardizing my own timeline at that point. But I just want to see, like, what were y'all doing? It's kind of crazy to me when you think about if you have conversations with your parents about them earlier in life, because obviously they were very different than when they know you as a, whether it's a teenager, adult, a kid, whatever. I just want to know, like, what was your life like? So I would go observe. I'd probably be, like, in private investigator mode. Like, I'd bug the house, take some of my high-tech technology back with me, and just try to figure out what's going on here. Let me figure out what's going on.
I love that. I love it. I would go back to the year 1994, I believe. And I would... Now, that's the first year without Michael Jordan. And the Bulls went to the Eastern Conference semifinals against the New York Knicks that year. And there was a horrible, horrible, horrible foul called in that game by Hugh Hollins, which kept the Bulls from advancing to the Eastern Conference finals that year. I would make sure that Hugh Hollins was, how do we put this? Not healthy for that game. Maybe a little, maybe I play a little tune on my violin. Maybe I get out the hammer. You know what I'm saying? Make sure that he can't run up and down.
You said a hammer?
So violence.
Violence is the answer, according to Grody.
This is for my guy, Grobber. This is for Grobber, okay?
Okay.
Because Hugh Hollins was a topic for him.
Aww.
So that's what I would do. Hugh Hollins is one of the great villains. And because who knows
I was
what
there.
Yeah, I know you were. The Bulls could have played the Houston Rockets that year in the NBA Finals if it hadn't been for Hugh Hollins. Thank you.
But would they have won?
I don't know.
Hakeem was pretty good that
year. I mean, probably not. They probably would not. I mean, they were clearly... God, that would have been fun to see the Jordan Bulls against the Hakeem Olajuwon Rockets that year.
The Jordan Bulls would have won if it's Jordan.
I think so, but it would have been fun. We got ripped off of that one. But yeah, that's what I would do.
Uh-huh. Love it. Yeah. Coming up next here on Raheemy, Harris, and Grody on 670 The Score. There's something that Caleb Williams hinted at, and then it's something that Roma Dunze echoed, and I think it actually goes farther than others do. It's the way they said it makes it sound like we might have a more confident team than we realize. So that's next on Raheemy, Harris, and Grody on The Score.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
If you want more than headlines this Bears season, listen to the Take the North podcast. I'm Mark Rohde, joined by Dan Wiederer. We bring you honest, unfiltered Bears talk three times a week, and we're not afraid to be critical when it's deserved, or certainly give credit when it is earned. With insider access and perspective that brings you inside the Bears locker room, Take the North is your home for Bears conversation that keeps it real. Listen to and follow Take the North wherever you get your pods.
Raheemy Harrison Grody, middays 10 till 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Man, I tell you what, I feel like I'm on repeat each and every week right now. I mean, I got nothing new to say to you guys. Did you even waver for a second? You knew exactly we had him right where we wanted him. Gosh, man. Goodness gracious.
That had to have been the edited version of the post-game speech from Ben Johnson. Gosh and goodness gracious. Like, he knew it was going to be on social media, so
Ned
he kept
Flanders.
It clean.
Oakley,
you know
Oakley.
What else? He was kneeling on the floor. Did you guys pick that up? Like, he was kneeling on the floor to begin the video and then, like, got up. And I'm like, what happened here? Like, it was demonstrative. You have to go back and watch.
There was some doubt, by the way.
Yeah, no, I definitely had doubts. I will admit that. This is Raheemy Harrison Grody on 670 The Score. And that's it. It's the fact that, as we've said many times in many different ways, if you win one score games in the NFL, you're a winning team. And for once, the Bears are 4-1 this season in one score games. Not only is it the opposite, the stark opposite of the regime from years past with Matt Eberflus, but to be able to have confidence that you think as a team that you can go down the field and win, that may be the most startling point of it all. It's that when they're asked to go down the field, even when they haven't been as successful previously in the game, we are seeing results.
The adage is, before my time anyway, you could say it's evergreen, good teams find a way to win. Bad teams find a way to lose. We saw last year that the Bears were really good at finding ways to lose. This year, they seem to have found over halfway through the season, they have found ways to win. That is undeniable. So you look at it and say, clearly everyone is on the same page in a way that if the game is just there for the taking in the fourth quarter, the Bears, more times than not, many more times than not, have found a way to win the game.
Well, and I will even say this, that there is a, dare I say, sustainability to the way the Bears have been winning games, as in there's enough of a sample size, even going back to last year, for Caleb Williams to say, yes, this man sprouts in the fourth quarters of games. To some degree, it's inexplicable considering how, not just this last game, but even games last year, how it was a big nothing in the first two quarters and the first drives of the game where you're like, does this guy get anything? Like, he's missing, you know, screen passes on the first drives of games. But there is a starting to become, in my mind, a sustainability to winning in the fourth quarter. Like, that seems real.
Can you get him to sprout in the first quarter?
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Like, and that's all I want with everything with the Chicago Bears. I want to look at the way that they win games, and I want to be able to say, yes, that is a sustainable way to win games. Earlier in the season, I didn't see as much of that. Now I'm starting to see some of that. The running game, that's seemingly, there have been enough games now where the Bears have run the ball well to say that's something that might be sustainable for this program this year and into the future. Caleb Williams in the fourth quarter doing what he does, sustainable now and into next year as well.
Well, and it's one thing for us to observe what we observe, and it's another thing to be skeptical as somebody watching the game. It's another when your skepticism, if you're on a team, is going to show. It showed last year. So I picked up on it twice now because Caleb Williams said it once against the Saints, and Rome Odunze said it again in the locker room, inside the locker room, on Sunday after the game, talking about what they think, describing this mindset as, and winning in these one-score games is believing in the no. So let's listen to Rome first, because he's the one who said it most recently.
Well, this is a board game where you've gone ahead in the last 2 minutes. How do you describe the belief that's swelling in this team in the late game?
Yeah, it's kind of what Lou said. You know, we're operating in the no, is what our coaches, you know, have harped on us. Coach L does a great job of giving us that message. You know, there's hope, there's belief, and then there's knowing. You know, we're operating in the no right now, understanding when we get to those two-minute situations, when we get to those opportunities where we go ice the game, we're going to go make it happen, and we know we're going to make it happen.
Now, I feel like that about some predictions, you know, hope, belief, and then knowing. I definitely felt that as somebody who predicts like sports outcomes, for example. Like, there are hopeful beliefs, and then there are actually believing it, and then there's just knowing this is how the game is going to go.
Is it living in the know or the known?
I thought it was the known.
Okay, I didn't hear the N there, but anyway.
I feel like it's understood.
I think, okay, carry on.
So Caleb Williams said it for the first time after the game against the Saints.
What's the feeling for you now, 4-2, and then looking ahead to what can come here?
Yeah, belief. Still, it's confidence. It's belief. It's living in the know, the known. You know, the feeling of myself this year, in the sense of when we have games, when we're going through the game plan. You know, when we get to the end of the week, it's more of a feeling of we know we're going to win. And, you know, that's not always going to be the case, but the feeling of it is different than, you know, maybe, you know, or you know, we got to go out here and play a perfect game or anything like that. It's living in the known of the feeling of we're going to come out here and win the game. And obviously a lot of things have to go right, and we got to execute, and we got to, you know, communication, all these different things. Defense has played well, offense has played well, special teams, all three sides of the ball. But living in the known is kind of where we're at. Even when we were 0-2, we were still living in the known that we're going to, you know, fight back, and, you know, we're going to be 2-2, and then we'll go 3-2, and then we'll be 4-2. And so it's living in the known. We have to, you know, do things throughout the week, hard work, you know, staying late, do all the right things. But living in the known is where we're living, and, you know, we got to stay there. We got to keep being consistent. We got to, you know, hold each other accountable. We got to do the right things to be able to stay consistent and be the team we want to be.
He says living in the known, but the way he describes it feels more like living in the we can, living in the can, because he said even when we don't, as in even though they feel like they know, that means sometimes it won't work out.
I don't understand any of it.
So I think it's more about a philosophy than anything else. But like, why wouldn't you have this philosophy?
What is the known? Like, seriously, like, I'm not trying to be ignorant here. Like, what does that mean? I living in the known. What do you known? What do you
know? I think it's that they thought that, like he said, they knew that there were weeks where they might have to play perfect football in order to have a shot at winning the game. And I think they're at a much more confident place thanks to practice. And let's remember, head coach called out practice habits earlier in the season.
And last year, different coach.
But the team called it out last year.
Cole Kmet called it out last year.
Right. This time it was Ben Johnson, and then you hear Caleb Williams allude to it. And I think that they needed something to phrase it in order for it to make sense in a game. Like, you have to tell yourself to have discipline, you know.
Is that what it is? Like, what is living in the known?
So I think it was just them describing their confidence of their practice habits and their understanding of the game being able to translate to knowing that they can win a football game this year.
So it's living in the knowing. Is that what it should be?
I think it's living in the known.
And knowing that they should win?
What the known is in that definition, this is what I'm taking away from it contextually.
Okay.
What living in the actual known is what they know. And what they know is they have the skills, they have the attitude, and they have the knowledge of how to win a game. It's not like they're coming up short anywhere. That's why I said it feels more like the can than the known, because yeah, you could do that, but it's more of a belief because they are prepared for the moment because they have all the skills. I'm with you, Grody, in that it's one thing to talk about it, but there's a certain level to me, especially going back to Caleb's comments, because he was saying 4-2 before they were 4-2, right? Like, if that's the Saints game, they're 3-2 at that point.
I got to look at the record, but I think he was trying to say that that's what their record was. They lost to the Ravens, obviously.
I get living in the now.
It's living in the known.
The now. What do they know? Like, when they're
4-2 after the Saints win.
When that's going through their heads as players, when they're apparently thinking about what the coaches are saying, and they're out on the field and we're living in the known, what do they know?
They know that they can probably win the game. And I don't think they knew that last year.
So that's
and I
what
think
it is,
that's why they
thing.
Found different ways to lose the games last year.
It's been something that's been stressed clearly by their coaching staff to remind them, that, okay. Hey, you got this. And like I said, when they're 0-2, coming off a blowout loss to the Lions, it's a fake it till you make it thing. Like, hey, we are capable. We do have enough talent on this roster. We do have a game plan that if we execute it, we will win. But you actually got to go out and do it. At some point, you know, winning yeah. solves everything. You got to go do it. So to hear Rome talk about it, as opposed to the way Caleb talked about it, I think the difference is by the time Rome's talking about it, they're coming off that Bengals win. They know that anything is possible.
Hey.
And they have a guy in Caleb Williams who at that point had already orchestrated three comebacks late in games to get the job done. So it's not like they were being asked to do something that they hadn't proven that they could do. That's what it comes down to me. That's yeah. even listening to them. But I think when Caleb said it the first time, it was more like, yeah.
It sounds like something a coach says that sounds really neat. The way, like, it's very deep and neat and
inspiring
in a way. But I don't even think the players know what they're saying. They're just saying we're living in the known without giving context to what it actually means.
No, I think it's them saying, like, they know that. A, they know what they've practiced all week.
Okay.
And then B, they know that they can win this game.
But you're just guessing.
Well, the context of the question.
Yeah.
I mean, when the question is asked and that's the answer.
Yeah.
I think, like, specifically, Rome was asked by Dan Weider about being able to win in the last 2 minutes of games. And so he alluded to it again, and that's why I thought it was interesting to bring up. I think they feel differently about games based on how they've practiced throughout the week. And I think you're seeing it in the results of the game.
It's definitely a model.
I feel like they're probably more confident in their material and their knowledge base going into a Sunday than they were last year.
But that's just it. We're all sitting here guessing and giving our opinions on what it might mean instead of being able to say, yes, live in the known.
I told you, my ultimate takeaway after listening to both those things that were weeks apart from each other is that when they say living in the known, it's more like living in the can because they know what is possible and that they can do it. One, because they have done it, but two, because they've been trained to do it. They're ready to do it. They've been prepared for this moment in the fourth quarter late in games when they're down or when the score's tied or whatever.
More answers. I will.
You're no,
I'm dead serious. Not being sarcastic.
For examples?
I will. No, I will ask them to further define what when you guys say living in the known, what specifically do you mean by that? To define it better for this show.
I think you can start with the head coach because that's where they're getting it from. So
all right, I'll ask Ben Johnson, but if I get a chance, if it feels right in the flow of the press conference tomorrow, I will, and maybe I'll have to wait till Thursday, I won't be there Friday, but I will ask players about it. I've got 2 days to ask players, and I'll try to get it into Ben tomorrow.
What about Darnell Wright? Are you going to point out that he wasn't born with a horn?
I just think it sinks my heart every time you say that. I mean, like, I've seen the commercials on TV, if you were born without a horn, call this number, or help the kids that were born without a horn.
No prehensile tail, no unicorn horn. It's a real bummer.
I don't have a horn. Oh,
this
man.
Is the way
also,
he said it.
I am so, so sorry.
847. Hey,
must
Jordan
be
sure isn't living in the known.
Yeah, can you imagine his parents, like when they would go to functions, and there's little Darnell without a horn? You know, I mean, that is, to me, that is just terrifying. Terrifying.
It sounds like a Gen X cartoon for the holidays, like growing up, like Rudolph is different because he's got the red nose or
all
something.
Right. See, he was born with a red nose, which turned out to be pretty cool now, didn't it, Donner and Blitzen?
Not just a birth defect. It was,
and Skippy.
What about Prancer and Vixen?
Prancer and Vixen and Snappy?
Them?
What about Snappy? Don't forget about Snappy.
You just
pretty sure
up.
I heard you say Comet and Cupid were no good there. And now Comet. You know what it's like to talk about sports.
Who was the father? Was it Prancer, the mean dad in Rudolph, where he was trying to rub off the red nose? Remember when he puts his paw on the nose and turns the red nose
that
to black?
That I don't know, because that stop motion, like, quote, cartoon, end quote, was, I think it deserves another look. Like,
it, really? Do tell. Say
I don't
more.
Know. I think, like, as a kid, you're just watching it, not really thinking. And as an adult, I'm like, huh, maybe I should watch this again.
You mean things that are not appropriate?
No, I don't know that it's not appropriate.
Like how fake the abominable snowman looks?
Yeah.
What the hell's going on out here?
Yeah.
Is that what it, I mean? No, the abominable snowman is, as an adult, not abominable. You know what I mean?
See, this is why we need to revisit it. Right now, caller 6 to the Scores Contest line, 312-540-0670. We'll win a pair of tickets to Football After Dark at Moretti's in Bedford Park on Tuesday, December 2nd, with special guest Nashawn Wright and hosted by me, Layla Rahimi. It's all sponsored by TimberTech Decking and Railing, number one in premium decking. Order free samples at TimberTech.com and brought to you by Remy Martin VSOP. This is my city.
Donner, by the way, who texted
us. Oh, it is Donner?
He was pretty strict. He was pretty mean. He just didn't get his kid.
You know who looked pretty magical? Victor Wembanyama.
Wemby, they call him.
Bulls lost to the Spurs. We got to talk about what Wemby did and what we're seeing, because I feel like an ascension is here. We'll do that next.
I don't have a horn.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
If you want more than headlines this Bears season, listen to the Take the North podcast. I'm Mark Rohde, joined by Dan Wiederer. We bring you honest, unfiltered Bears talk 3 times a week, and we're not afraid to be critical when it's deserved, or certainly give credit when it is earned. With insider access and perspective that brings you inside the Bears locker room, Take the North is your home for Bears conversation that keeps it real. Listen to and follow Take the North wherever you get your pods.
We're talking to play-by-play man Kevin Harlan. You're the best when it comes to play-by-play of life.
We're sending Marshall Harris to D.C. to run on the field.
Come on, Marshall. Nah. Bring it home, baby. We're ready for you.
The Rahimi Harrison Grody Show, middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
Victor Wembanyama with 9 on the shot clock. One-on-one against Nikola Vucevic at the top of the key. Crossing over. Ames fires for 3. Got it! Are you kidding me? Victor Wembanyama with back-to-back triples. That's his 6th in 9 attempts. He's got 36.
Oh, Wemby was a problem. This is Rahimi Harrison Grody on 670 The Score. That is Chuck Swirsky and the Bulls Radio Network. The Spurs beat the Bulls, coming back, scoring 32 points in the fourth quarter, outscoring them 32-19. For a 121-117 final. Wemby with his first win against the Bulls and looked a lot like he did in that season opener against the Mavericks. 38 points for Victor Wembanyama, 12 rebounds, 5 assists, 5 blocks. And those blocks looked effortless by him. The matchup of also Wemby on Vooch, I think, was pretty significant in this one, because There's just like nothing you could do. Like, Vooch is defending Wemby at the 3-point line. Wemby goes off. He was 6 of 9 from 3, by the way. And Vooch like puts up a hand, and I'm like, yeah, that's like me putting up a hand on Marshall. Where's it gonna go? That ball's going right over my head and into the net.
His defense was good, right?
There's only
so much you can do.
Victor Wembanyama didn't have a great offensive rookie season. Then he gets season 2 stopped short because of the blood clot. The people don't really understand what Victor Wembanyama is capable of. I thought last night was a pretty good display of what Victor Wembanyama is capable of. He's going to be a problem. It is only a matter of time, tick, 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 before he is the best player in the NBA. And some say it could happen this year.
Oh, I very much think it could happen this year.
Like all the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and the Luka Truthers, that's cool and all, but the way he affects the games on both ends of the court is just, it's almost hard to comprehend unless you watch it for yourself and see the level of some of the blocks that he got last night.
I'm surprised he only had 5. Like, I feel like he has a chance at blocking most shots.
Because he changes other shots. Even if he doesn't block your
shot, he
alters the shot that you're trying to take.
Going from one side of the court, taking 2 steps to the guy, shooting a 3 in the corner, and getting a hand in the guy's face, affecting the shot.
It's also not just how he drives a lane or how he drives down the court. It's the fact that when he backs up, you know, when he takes a step back in the paint, if he wants a fadeaway or something like it, you're talking about 5 feet of space he's just made himself by doing that.
Yeah, the step back, I felt bad for Vooch. I thought the Bulls should have played that differently at the end.
Yeah.
Because you got to get the ball out of his hands, period. You just got to get the ball out of his hands. You can't let him ISO. Because at that point, you're saying, I'm gambling that you're just going to miss a shot that is basically a practice shot. Because no one, not even 7-footer Vooch, can alter what you're doing when you have the ball in your hands. That's the problem.
Well, that's it. I mean, you know, Wemby floats back to the 3-point line like it's no big deal. So then Vooch is with him. I didn't think the reason, I'm assuming the reason the Bulls did not double team Vooch is because they didn't want to get, or double team Wemby rather, is they didn't want to get people in foul trouble.
Or De'Aaron Fox is on your team too.
Yeah, that part. Like, that's, you have to devote resources to this, and there's got to be an understanding of help defense, right? Because De'Aaron Fox, as we've talked about, has the speed to match Wemby's height, you know, and that is a lethal combination for a team.
He's on pace to break the record for 3-pointers in a season per game, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. Here's why I'm not worried about the Bulls, though. People are like, well, they've lost 3 in a row. Mark, you want to back off what you said about the Bulls?
They lost 3 in a row to very good teams.
It's not even that. It's not even that.
Closers.
They're 6-4 still through 10 games. They have played the most difficult schedule in the NBA through 10 games.
Sounds right.
Josh Giddey didn't even play last night, and they were right there. Kobe White's coming back for this West Coast trip upcoming. And people who are like, well, they should trade Kobe White. Kobe White and Josh Giddey can coexist. And you're wondering who's going to be taking these last second shots for the Bulls if they need one. Kobe White has proven he is capable of that. Everything is angling up for the Bulls, trending in the right direction when you look at how they've gotten through the first 10 games. Again, the most difficult schedule in the league through 10 games and have a winning record. They're good to go, in my opinion.
Now, they've got that Monday night game next week against Denver at Denver.
I like that game for them.
Tricky, you know, but Detroit, Utah, as you mentioned, Denver, then Portland, Miami, Washington at New Orleans. You know, your favorite team. The one who they could have done business with for the unprotected first round pick.
Instant question for you, Layla. Instant question. Who played the best for the Bulls last night? Because we talked a lot of Wemby. Who was your MVP from last night for the Bullies?
Is it Kevin Huerter?
That's pretty good.
I feel like Kevin Huerter definitely had a good game.
23 points, 4 of 9 from 3. I go Io. Hitting threes in the fourth quarter, 20 points
in
the game.
They needed every bit of Io's defense last night.
No doubt. Marshall, MVP from last night?
I think I'm going to have to go with Trey Jones.
Okay.
Because Trey Jones knew that Giddey wasn't going to be there, and the load was on him, and he didn't have any assists early in that game, but he finishes the night with 20 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists. He only turns the ball over once in 33-plus minutes, so I think it's got to be him. Jalen Smith, a close honorable mention with 11 and 12 off the bench. So I like, but the formula is still there. They had a lead late in the fourth quarter. They just didn't have Wemby or an answer for him.
No, and I don't. Who in the league, when he's playing like that, will you have to double team him if you want to try to get anything done? And how many teams can't afford to double team him and confidently cover Deer and Fox as another option? That's tough.
It's all a problem.
What about Luke Kornet? 16 points. Boy, oh boy.
It's all a problem.
Did you hear Stacey King last night talking about it?
I did.
The comp to Rob, the big shot Bob. Classic Layla moment.
So can I tell you why that happened? Because the Bulls outsiders at NBC Sports Chicago had a really good point about Daniel Gafford.
Which was a show, by the way. Not Bulls Outsiders, but that was a
show,
podcast,
Bulls,
right?
Outsiders. Yeah. it was a show. And we were all like, why is Gafford not getting more minutes?
Great dunker, by
Daniel
the way.
Gafford, who was a starting five on an NBA Finals team, but mind you, and even in his rookie season, we're like, why isn't he getting more minutes? Like, he's showing more than just flashes. This guy fits. Like, this guy is a good player. And then it was asked about, somehow it came up, and the answer was how much Jim Boylan on camera said he loved Luke Kornet, and that's when he made the comp. And poor Luke hasn't lived it down. His mom was one of my favorite news anchors growing up in Dallas. I feel like I betrayed the family, but that was the info.
Yeah.
That was a direct quote I had, word for word.
And Stacey kind of mentioned, I remember him being compared to Robert Horry, man. I don't know about that.
The fact that Jim Boylan said that he reminds him of Robert Horry.
The and way then you there was said no, it.
The reaction from Stacy.
Yeah, that's the payoff.
What?
Also, 312 on the text line. Can you guys tell me why the Bulls didn't double team or hack or just not let Wembanyama beat you? Let someone else beat you. I agree with the double team, but it's tough. And as far as the hack, the man hit 9 of 10 free throws last night, and he's an 84% free throw shooter this year. Hacking was not the
His arms are so long. He just has to, like, lean over, and he gets a free throw.
He's not a baby.
He's long, and he's strong.
Not
he's
a baby.
Age-wise, he is a baby.
He is a baby, yeah, in that regard. You can't take your eyes off him, and I know that's the case with all superstars, but just the specimen that he is, like, I can't, I could never take my eyes off him,
he's
defensively 21. Or offensively.
He's 21
that's
years old.
That's crazy.
A baby.
He is just a baby.
21 years old.
You can have tall babies.
Good luck to us in the Olympics. Good luck to us.
Oh, yeah. Team France is loaded. Yeah. We got a couple Essengay? Years for that.
Essengay going to be up on that?
Probably.
Yeah.
By the way, it is Blackhawks and Bulls season on Chicago Sports Network. Visit subscribe.chsn.com to sign up for your 7-day free trial of their all-access plan. Over 300 live games per year. Chicago Sports Network, your home stream advantage. Coming up next, our quarterback guru, Tim Jenkins. We look at the tape next on Raheem Harrison Grody.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
If you want more than headlines this Bears season, listen to the Take the North podcast. I'm Mark Rohde, joined by Dan Wiederer. We bring you honest, unfiltered Bears talk 3 times a week, and we're not afraid to be critical when it's deserved or certainly give credit when it is earned. With insider access and perspective that brings you inside the Bears locker room, Take the North is your home for Bears conversation that keeps it real. Listen to and follow Take the North wherever you get your pods.